From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Samantha Wright, filling in for Jim and Gaudette, and this is Idaho Matters. Here's a question that is not easy to answer. How do owls pick a spot to nest? You can't just ask them, and as night creatures, it can be tricky to track them down to study them. So University of Idaho student Annie Vogie spent her summer in southeastern Arizona studying six kinds of owls to find out how they use their habitat and how a changing environment might affect how they live. And she's joining us now to talk about her research. Welcome, Annie.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, how did you get caught up studying owls in Arizona?
It has a couple of layers to it. So last year, I was a part of the Doris Duke Conservation Scholars Program at the University of Idaho. And as a project as that, I joined a PhD student, Cassandra Townsend, in Arizona, and her project collaborated with Hawkwatch International. And so we paired up with the lead scientist, Dave Oliar, and this was his Following Forest Owls project. And it's been going on for over a decade and with Hawkwatch International.
Wow, that's amazing. What kind of owls did you get to study?
Yeah, so we had six kinds that were in the area when we were down there, and it was the northern saw-whet owl, the northern pygmy owl, the flammulated owl, the whiskered screech owl, the western screech owl, and the elf owl. However, we only caught and handled the whiskered screech owl, the western screech owl, and the elf owl while I was down there. And the elf owl is the smallest in the raptor family, and so it's only about the size of a sparrow, and so it was super cool to see that.
Wow, it's like a little tiny owl.
Yeah, it was tiny but feisty.
Oh my gosh. So how do you find owl nests? Are they hard to find?
Yeah, they were. They're actually really hard to find. The part that isn't hard to find is the cavities, because they're made by excavators, so woodpeckers, or there's chimneys. And so owls choose the either nest in cavities, in the cavities in the chimneys or the excavations. But there's just so many trees in a hole, so many holes in a tree that it's hard to figure out which ones would have an owl on it. And so there were different ways that we went about it. There's a database that has potential cavities that could have owls in it or that have had owls in them in the past. And so we would put those GPS coordinates into a GPS and then go find them and try to see if there were owls in there at the time or if there was any sign of owls. Or we would just pick random spots and do 50 by 50 meter grids and then split that into quadrants and then search for cavities in those quadrants.
Well, and then you have to look inside the cavity to see if there are owls or baby birds in there. And I understand you used a camera on a pole. How smart is that? That's awesome.
Yes, it's we had painter poles and they could extend up to 13 meters high, but we usually taped multiple poles on top of each other with duct tape. And then we had a 3D printed camera. And so we would screw that on the top of the painter poles. And then we would have all that and try to stick it into a tree. And we would have screens where you could see what the camera was showing. And it was crazy. It's called gaffing. And so the gaffer would be the person holding a pole or multiple poles and trying to aim it into the hole. And so it was the more holes that there were and the higher up that it was extended, the more wobbly and uncontrolled it was. But it was really fun to just play the game of trying to fit the camera into the hole and trying to wiggle around and see if we could see anything.
Well, how much fun is that? You mentioned mapping, figuring out where the owl nests are, and you were doing that. You also kept track of temperature. Why would temperature make a difference in where an owl decides to make a nest?
Yeah, so temperature, usually we put eye buttons in some of the good quality cavities or in cavities that we knew that owls had nested in to see if maybe the difference of the outside temperature and the inside temperature is why an owl would keep choosing the same cavity or if it had any special special significance to the owl. And that is still ongoing. growing, and the data isn't completely collected for all that yet, but it's still ongoing, and it's just really important to see where the migration and the territories of all these owls are, because they're very territorial. And so we're just trying to see if temperature is maybe changing that, and if they're shifting their ranges a little bit, or where they could end up, or if they are going back to the same places. It all just depends on where they had the most successful fledglings, and if they just want to go back to that cavity. And temperature can have a very significant role in that decision.
Wow. We're speaking with University of Idaho student Annie Vogie about her research with owls. You got to trap and band owls. How do you catch an owl and how do you do it at night?
Yes, this was very, very fun. The lead scientist Dave Oliar called it fishing for owls with a net in the dark, and so that's pretty much how it was. We used the painter poles and put mist nets on t attached them to the poles and kind of set it up like a field goal. And so then we would use playback sound and use the owl's own calls to try to draw them in, since they're very territorial, and if they hear any unknown owl call, they will go straight towards it and kind of go to challenge it. And so we used set up the mist nets, and we used the playback to draw them in. And once we had an owl that was close enough to capture, we would just keep switching sides and be on the opposite side of where the owl call was coming from. And so it was a lot of cat and mouse. It would until hopefully the owl would be on the other side from the playback speaker, and then go and fly into the net. And then we would take them from the net and ban them from there.
Wow. Oh, that sounds like so much fun. You mentioned the U of I Doris Duke Scholarship. What is that and how does it work?
Yes, it's a 2-year summer internship program, and it's paid. And so it gives you. It focuses on diversity, equity, and inclusion, but also it gives you 2 summers worth of work in any kind of realm that you really want to. The first summer focuses on the university's projects that are available. And so for me, it was the OWL project was available for my university. And then the second summer is spent working with an agency of your choice, doing what you want to do. And so it's all about opening doors to your career path and your educational goals. And along the way, you just make so many amazing connections and meet so many people that share similar interests. And it's a great connecting, and it's just a life-changing experience all around, because I don't know what I would be doing if I wasn't part of the program now. It's just opened the Arizona opportunity for me, and I'm just very thankful to be a part of it.
So what happens next for you? Where do you go next?
Yeah, I'm in my second summer of the Doris Duke program, and so now I'm going to be heading down to New Mexico to work with black bears and bighorn sheep, and working on habitat assessments for mule deer, elk, and other ungulates.
That is awesome. Where was that when I was in school? Oh my gosh. We've been speaking with University of Idaho student Annie Vogie about her study of owls and how they pick their nests in southeastern Arizona. I want to thank you so much for sharing your story and for everything that you're doing for animals and good luck.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It was nice talking to you.
You too. I'm Samantha Wright, filling in for Jim Agudat. You're listening to Idaho Matters.
Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Chip Brantley, co-host of the NPR podcast White Lies. Before we found the man in Vancouver, before we sued the State Department, before we snuck into the graveyard of a federal penitentiary, all we had were the photographs. Photographs of a group of Cuban men standing on the roof of a prison in rural Alabama. That's this season on the NPR podcast White Lies.